Hello and welcome to Psyched, the show where we explore psychedelics through social, economic, and political perspectives. Let's introduce our next speaker. We have Tyler Bryden, who will be talking on technology for good, technology to improve psychedelic research, therapy, and knowledge mobilization. Tyler Bryden is a passionate psychedelics advocate and speaker that works in technology, marketing, and mental health. He started his entrepreneurship journey after several profound personal healing experiences with plant medicine. Tyler and the team at Sessions AI extract meaningful insights from personal journals and recorded sessions to help improve psychedelic research, therapy, and knowledge mobilization. Tyler personally supports MAPS Canada and other organizations in the space. He also started the Forest City Psychedelic Community in London, Ontario, to bring together people to inform, inspire, and heal. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Psyched.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me here. It is, you know, truly, a very humbling experience to be following some of the speakers here today, here yesterday. An amazing diversity in the audience that we actually had, and I'm hoping that I can make this 20 minutes worthwhile. I did a little practice yesterday, and I went 40 minutes, so I'm gonna speed through this, and hopefully I can do a good job representing, what we're actually trying to accomplish. I think as a community here, with so many people just trying to work together to build a happier and healthier world. And there's been a couple people who have talked about this. Shlomi did a great job of, not just is the care delivery such an important piece, it's also the technology and the infrastructure that's needed to be built to administer care in an effective way. So today I'm going to try to look at basically technology for good. And, how can we actually use technology to improve psychedelic research, therapy, and knowledge mobilization? And I'll touch on the term knowledge mobilization a little bit later, but the idea that knowledge mobilization can be exchanged with knowledge sharing, communication, and even maybe a dirtier word, but marketing of how can we get this information to the right people who actually are capable of making decisions. And that's something, I know I'm very excited about, and many people in this community are. So first I wanted to start with, this is a quote from a MAPS article that I dug out from 2018, and Alexander did sort of an analysis of psychedelics and technology. And I won't read the whole quote, but I like this idea. It's problematic because psychedelics are a technology. Much as an automobile brings you from A to Q, so too does an entheogenic sacrament bring you from one state of awareness to another. And that's something that I'm thinking about consistently. Psychedelics, psilocybin, any of these substances seem to be sort of this natural technology that can amplify our intelligence and really get us in touch with ourselves and the larger consciousness and world. And so that's something I'm exploring, and then taking into consideration, can technology actually be used for good? And I don't usually do this. This is exciting for me. I've got a little bit of a list of some of the content that I want to talk about today. And when we talk about technology, I think there's a lot of opportunities, but I think we've also got to address some of the risks as well too. And first, for some people, this is actually the first time that anyone's actually maybe heard of me, of what I'm doing. And so I just want to do a little bit of an introduction to just show you, where I'm actually coming from and why I'm looking at, how I can contribute and how the team that we have can contribute to the psychedelic community. And hopefully that will sort of illuminate a little bit of what I'm actually thinking and how I'm viewing this. So I'm just going to take you back a little bit. That's my sister's hand. She took this picture last night. I grew up on a farm, and one thing that has become really clear to I think many of us is there's power in technology, but you can't replace the actual power of nature. You can't it's so compelling and it's so beautiful, and It's such an important part of our actual healing process. And I was lucky enough to actually grow up on a farm, surrounded by nature. And that was such a big part of my, understanding of, the roots that we have. And I take this into consideration with everything that I'm doing, of just how important nature actually is. And, one of the questions that I'm asking myself is, how can we sort of combine nature, natural intelligence, and then merge that with technology, artificial intelligence, and some of the things that, we're working on, but many people are actually working on as well too. Just a little bit of a background. This was me as a hockey player, 2002, 2003. I have my stick under that guy's skate. He is going to fall. I'm going to get a penalty, and I deserve that penalty. So I was always a little bit mischievous, always, always up to something. And hockey was a big part of my life. And so what I wanted to highlight here today, this was actually the final night of my career, and amazing moment in some ways and not in the other. And we actually won a championship that day, and you can sort of see the people celebrating in the background, some cameras and stuff. And here's my mom. She looks like she's about to cry. And then here's me actually hugging my dad as well too. And hockey was always a very communal thing for us. But at this time in my life, there was, my parents were separated, and we actually went through a really difficult, tumultuous childhood. My dad struggled with alcoholism, and, Shlomi touched on it, some adverse effects or events in your childhood can really lead to, a damaging upbringing, or as you get later in life. And that's what happened to me. And the last night when we won this game, instead of this joy that I expected to feel, 15 years of work, dedication, I sort of felt completely empty, and I lost all meaning. And here's a picture of later that night. I've got beers in my hand. This was part of the culture. I don't know why my pants are unbuckled. There's something going on there. But this was the first night of really obnoxious summer of partying that was fostered by the culture, and then the success of that game, and really led me into sort of a downward spiral. And the difficult part for me here is, I actually came across psychedelic substances during this time. So psilocybin mushrooms came into my life. And instead of the partying, the hard partying that was going on with my friends, I started to, navigate through some of those actual experiences. And I was having all these revelations, but I didn't understand. And this is where, the knowledge mobilization, the education piece is so actual important here. I didn't understand dosage set and setting. I didn't understand what integration was. And I didn't understand the power of these substances. And so as I was using these substances, these medicines, I was having revelations, and I wasn't integrating them properly. And at 21, a couple of days after my 21st birthday, my dad actually, he ended up having a heart attack, and he lived. But because of the relationship as, going through childhood, there was a lot of things that came to the surface for me. And really this led to, me sort of, spiraling out of control. And I ended up as an inpatient in the hospital. It's a very dark time in my life. And realistically, there was barely seconds that could go by where I couldn't stop thinking of, how I didn't deserve to be here. And the only way was to not be here anymore. And so I literally had to be an inpatient in the hospital. And Canada gets a lot of love for our healthcare system, but anyone who's actually been through it knows that there's still a lot of problems, and it's not necessarily the best place to actually heal. And so that's where, for myself, the importance, the need of self-healing actually came into place. And, how did, the question started to emerge for me is, how can I recover? And, as I allude to a little bit later here, I did recover, and still a lot of work to do. But those were the questions I have: what worked and what didn't. The knowledge that not everyone has access to a treatment, to treatment and a supportive community. I love to talk about accessibility of this treatment. And as you're having those experiences, who can you talk to actually work through the experiences you're having? How can you process that information? How are other people healing themselves? We hear this idea of like the holistic approach to well-being. I think that's something really powerful and important here as well too. And then for myself, what emerged was the power of self-documenting, the power of self-reflection and self-awareness, which many people in this community care deeply about. And, as I sort of dug into this, this was my process. I was constantly writing text notes. I was recording audio notes. I was recording videos. I was just writing on scraps of paper, really trying to integrate those experiences that I have. And, basically what I started to find was how powerful that was actually in my own healing journey. And that this process was actually sort of validated in some other places as well too. And this was a great sort of research paper showing how people who journaled through traumatic events actually showed positive change. So this started to conceptualize for me a process, not just, for example, a technology that I could work with, but also a process and methodology. And that's what I'm working on a little bit today and will continue to share. This is a picture of me a little bit through my healing journey. You can see, you can't see me on the screen right now, but this was me at about 280 pounds after my hockey career. And so when you swap out one vice, we know that another vice comes in. For me, that was eating. I was 280 pounds at this point. And although I looked happy in this picture, I started to document a little bit of the work I was doing. There was still a lot of work to do and still a lot of suffering. And I think many of us have come from some sort of background where we've had this experience and we don't want to see people go through the same struggles again. And I wanted to touch, I am talking about technology today, but I wanted to touch on one thing here, which is, we can have all the technology in the world, but that doesn't change the connection to nature. That doesn't change the connection to community. And so this has been a huge part of my life. This is an office called Innovation Works, not an office, it's a co-working space in a community out of London, Ontario. And I was lucky enough to be one of the founding members here. And, this community has changed the trajectory of London as a city. We did a lot of work for social enterprises and nonprofits. And I think the same way that there was a community built here, I think that's what many of us are trying to do in this space, and something I'm so excited and privileged to be a part of. Now, this is where I want to shift a little bit into the actual sort of technology that that we're seeing. And there are some things to think about here, but these are some trends that are not just going to affect sort of psychedelics, but they're affecting mental health and I think just the world in general. And before I can sort of touch on, maybe some of the opportunities, I think it's really important to actually acknowledge the risks as well too. So, monopolization, wealth inequality, and need for growth comes from, just a need for exponential growth with technology. And we're going to continue to see that. There's big companies who maybe not participating in this space right now, but as it becomes more accessible, as it grows, they're going to come into the space. And that's something that we need to consider. And, as that next point, this idea of the a technological elite and the black box of technology, we don't know how a lot of this stuff is actually working sometimes. So how are we going to interface with that technology? Here, privacy and security issues, this is undoubtedly an issue that we have to, consider. People are going to be at some of their most vulnerable states of their life as they sort of go through this healing, as they go through this process. And how can we respect that privacy and help them heal in a proper way? And then on top of that, that medicines like this are actually still illegal in many places. So there's also an even increased risk there. I'm going to add, the amount of identifying information in voice, your face, and digital data is incredible. And I'm going to break down a little bit of how people are looking at voice and extracting information out of that. But these are fingerprints to who we are. And there's a lot of risk in providing that information and how we need to actually protect that. Steph did an amazing job talking yesterday, the bias of people developing this technology. This is something I've seen. I've seen inherent shortcomings in the technology, not only that we're building, that other people are building. And most of the technology has been built with some purpose in the mind, and it wouldn't be built if there wasn't some sort of end motivation of profit to begin with. So we have to consider that when we're actually looking at technology and bringing that technology to treat people going through psychedelic assisted therapy, but just mental health in general. And then lastly, decisions made on inaccurate information. And I think this is something that I will touch on as well too, but if we're trying to automate some of the analysis or automate some of the diagnosis of people going through therapy, we could actually have improper information that we're actually trying to make assessments on, and that could be very, very dangerous. So I just wanted to touch on this quickly. When I was really, investigating this, this space and trying to figure out is there anything I can do to contribute? Is there anything I can actually do to help? This story came out, and for many of us in the community, I think this was a warning of, the potential that could come here. And, many of us want to see, this technology, and this treatment and this the modality scale and reach a larger audience in the world so we can actually treat people and have a healthier and happier world. But there's inherent risks in that. And people with the best intentions can be corrupted very quickly with a couple things that can happen here. So it's something we need to be considerate of. And I think the work that they're doing at the Oren Fund, at the North Star Pledge, is something that we should consider here in the space, because we all want to see it grow, and we have to have some checks on ourselves as we actually move forward. So I do want to talk about a little bit of, you know, what is actually happening. And again, these are trends, not just in, you know, psychedelics, but this is mental health technology in general, and will have an impact on people within this community. So data passed oil for the world's most valuable resource. I think that's something that we do need to consider. People want data, and it enables us to learn. It enables us to make good decisions. And some of the best research that we've had, and JR just talked about it, comes from collecting data properly and then being able to communicate that to people. So how can we take that into consideration? There's more AI, machine learning services and applications. You can go to Amazon, you can touch into cognitive services and automatically get facial recognition. You can automatically start to transcribe things. You know, there's a much more democratized way to access technologies that no one could even get before. So we need to think about that. And then ability to do multimodal analysis. So this is something that I'm touching on here. And, you know, in the past, we would look very simplistically at just the words, for example. And now we're looking at the brain, we're looking at the linguistic side of voice, we're looking at the acoustic side, and we're looking at facial expressions. There's micro expressions and things that we can actually extract from just small amounts of information. And, you know, last point on that, I think, is just there's a ton of progress towards, with all this information, trying to be predictive. And Shlomi touched on that. This is the work, is can you stop someone from, you know, suffering before they actually go down that path? And that's something I'm thinking about a lot as well, too. So I wanted to take a look. This is a company in Toronto called Winterlight Labs. And this is actually how they would look at, they're focused on Alzheimer's and dementia. But this is them taking a look at basically an audio recording and how they would actually extract information out of that. So you can see little things like a word level repetition might show that someone's struggling with memory, and that's an indicator that they're actually progressing towards Alzheimer's and dementia. So something that you know, might be just taken for granted is all of a sudden a very powerful indicator of an illness, or in this case, Alzheimer's and dementia. Now, what I wanted to, you know, take a look at is the limitations when you actually have technology that's only not necessarily doing enough of a holistic analysis. So I can take, you know, and I'll show you an example here. This is a little bit of the technology that we've built. And this was a great video by Academy Wellness Center. And they were taking a look at this guy, and he sort of did a testimonial after he actually went through ketamine treatment. And for example, we're doing some sentiment analysis, not even necessarily emotion analysis. And he says, granted, I wasn't as miserable as I had been, but at the same time, there weren't the joys either. And if we were just to look at the words here, you can see that indicator of sentiment here. There's actually a limitation. And so this is where I think a lot of companies are trying to get over, and at the same time not trying to make decisions based on false positives or things, because to me this actually isn't as positive as negative as it needs to be. So something that we're considering there. Back to the presentation. You know, this is another thing that we're seeing emerge, you know, very, very quickly, which is virtual care and monitoring. Part of this was obviously accelerated by COVID. You know, I'm seeing, you know, some ketamine clinics and you know, treatment clinics, just about 30% of their sessions are now virtual, more than that at peak. And we don't know exactly where that's going to stay, but it's going to continue. There's large companies like MindStrong and Talkspace and Two Chairs who are not necessarily in focused on psychedelics, but they're focusing on improving the methodology of treatment across mental health in general. And I think these companies, again, once this becomes more accessible, are going to come into this space, and they're going to have big budgets, they're going to have a development team, and there's going to be a lot of power as they try to also operate in this space. Ketamine clinics seeing reduced number of patients. I was talking to some that were only seeing about 5 to 10 of their actual patient load that they were getting before. And we're already seeing MindBloom, Field Trip. Ronan was just on there. They're administering a virtual treatment. MindBloom is actually giving ketamine pills, and then Field Trip is doing breathing assisted treatment sessions. There's a lot actually happening in terms of virtual care, and I think that is going to be a trend that we see continue here. And I think the goal is to improve accessibility and care and decrease costs. But at the same time, there's a lot of those things that we talked about with the risk that we need to be careful of. So how can we actually take care of people privately and securely and make them feel safe? And with that last note, you know, how does monitoring recording actually impact treatment? If you're aware, for example, that a session is being recorded or a clinical trial is being recorded, how does that actually impact your recovery? How does that actually impact your treatment? And I think this is something that we want to think about as well, too. Shlomi touched on this a little bit, but this stuff I actually find, you know, extremely fascinating. And it was really absolutist words. So what are absolutist words? They're basically, once we get past the state of we can no longer see temporarily, we can only look into, we see everything as permanent. So because COVID came, the world is this way and it's always going to be this way. Or I'm a loser and I'm depressed and I'm always going to be this way. These are signs, early indicators that we are trending down a negative direction, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation. And can we detect those signals early so that we can actually stop people from having a negative experience and trending down? And this is something that when I look back on my own life, I question, if I had known these indicators, if I had had a self-monitoring tool or technology like some of the people in this community are looking at, would I have been able to avoid some of the suffering that I had? And, just as an example, this is from a plant medicine. This is a look into my own life and how I'm actually using some of my own system. What I'm doing is recording a little intention setting for myself. I'm extracting the keywords out of it. And what I'm trying to understand are, what are the keywords of psychedelics? What are these indicators that someone's going to have a positive experience versus a negative experience? And we've heard things about, a mystical experience and Michael Pollan's term ineffable. But what are these early indicators for us here that we can actually detect and help people early, but then heal as they actually go through the process? And this is something that I'm spending a lot of time on. And for example, seeing, here where I'm talking about experience, the four times that I've said it, and then being able to instantly navigate through to those instances, search through transcripts and things like that to get a much better understanding and a quicker sort of efficient navigation through this. And lastly, I'll just add the power of that for me to sort of look back at my own reflection, my own healing has been truly incredible and valuable and something that has helped me along the way. And I hope that, with some of the community here watching today, that we can, bind together and see if there's some other ways that we can improve this kind of technology and way that we're looking at it to help people actually self-heal as well too. And then, last trend that I just wanted to touch on is sort of like real-time analysis and feedback. And this is something that I'm, this is exciting stuff. I'm sad you can't see my face right now, or if you can, I'm very, very excited about this, because the question is, and in an unscientific way, but like, how can we raise our vibrations in real time? How can we use tools and technology to help ourselves understand ourselves at that moment and then improve? And, we've seen some examples of that. I think Breathscape is an amazing application where it actually monitors your breathing and then builds music off of that. And to think of that interaction, that computer human interaction that we actually have, it's an amazing thing, and it's an amazing actual opportunity. And along that line, what we can actually do is set up contextual triggers to actually help people. So just to give you an example of what a real-time sort of analysis would look like, so say I'm happy, and it's always nervous to see, type in real time, I am having the best day ever, I love y'all, this is great community, right? So that's charting out my sentiment in real time. Of course, there needs to be more work to done in this, but if I know in real time that these indicators are popping up, what could we do to add contextual triggers to help people, to interject, to intervene, could we communicate this to a patient provider, a treatment provider? What can we actually do with this information? And that's again where I'm continuously connecting with the community and with some amazing people who are actually helping us validate these signals and then actually help people. And I'll add one last thing that I think is very cool around the sound, sort of the real-time piece. This is sort of if I'm transcribing in real time. So what can I do? Happy, sad, angry, magic mushrooms. That's just for fun. But the idea here is those contextual moments where I'm just triggering with words there, but imagine we could trigger off audio, imagine we could trigger off tonality, imagine we could trigger off all those things and literally give people ambient experiences, help them heal. And just like Mendel Kaling is doing with sound, what can we use these real-time signals of ourselves to actually improve the healing? Coming out of ending my time here, and I hope you enjoyed a little bit of a look at that into some of the technology in the space and then what's going on in this mind here and some of our team here. But I wanted to quickly touch on sort of this idea of knowledge mobilization. And knowledge mobilization for me again, can be communication, knowledge sharing, and used in an academic sense. But like, how is all this amazing work that we're doing, we're bringing this community together, but how can we get that out to the larger public? And we've seen instances like that, Fantastic Fungi, which brought, you know, to me, you know, brought communities together and brought families together, where the most people would be scared to bring, you know, someone to a screening or talk about these substances, but to bring it to a movie like this with animations and great storytelling, that is so absolutely powerful for making this actually happen. One thing to note, there's a lot of nonprofits in the space, and there's a little bit of controversy here. I know MAPS doesn't use Google, but there's an amazing program called Google Grants for Nonprofit. It gives you $10,000 USD a month in free ads to sort of amplify your message based off what people are searching for. And that's something to consider if you are a nonprofit in the space and are trying to figure out what to do with a limited budget. MAPS Canada and Canadian Psychedelic Association, I've helped set them up with that program. And we've seen a lot of, you know, maybe 100 people extra a day on the website, which is, you know, really helping. I'll add there that they are working right now on a Decriminalize Nature Canada petition. I'll drop a link in the chat after this. And I think, you know, for many of us here, we do want to see, you know, we want to make the healing potential of psychedelics a reality. And to do that, we need to affect public policy. We need to affect sentiment. And, you know, we need to get this information in the right hands of the right people who can actually have the power to make these changes. So that's sort of what I wanted to talk about today. And I do, you know, again, appreciate you being here. Anyone who tuned into this means a lot. If you want to connect with me, here's some options. And, you know, very happy to chat with anyone in the community. You know, with some names, speakai.co, we've also got sessions.ai and doing some really interesting stuff with tech. We'd love to accelerate that development and just help contribute to this community. So thank you very much for everything. This was a little bit of a look at technology for good and how we can use technology to improve psychedelic research, therapy, and knowledge mobilization. Thank you very much.
Tyler, thanks so much. Really appreciated it. Love to hear from you and hear you present on all of these topics. I wanted to, you know, kick it off and just ask a couple questions. You know, one of the conversations, we were on this research chat a few weeks back with Tanya, and one of the things that I was personally interested in was seeing, you know, how can we actually do analysis of community-based dynamics, interpersonal dynamics with, you know, Speak AI, Sessions AI type software. Could you give, you know, a little bit of a picture, maybe paint something for us that could, you know, describe how interpersonal communication might be informed also by these tools?
Yeah, this is actually really fascinating. This was out not for psychedelics for where I saw this, but what we were looking at was a simulation center at a hospital in London, Ontario. And what they were doing was simulating treatment session. And what they were actually looking for was communication breakdowns between the doctors who were administrating the therapy. And, you know, for us, they actually had sort of validated keywords or signals that showed that there was breakdowns in that communication. I think that there's, you know, things that we could identify, you know, from a sort of conceptual level really easily, but I think we could also look, you know, as people go through, for example, psychedelic experiences, I think there's a lot that we could actually identify from that interpersonal level. So that's work that I don't think has been done. I think that's very interesting stuff. And, you know, the communal healing of psychedelics and psychedelic therapy and treatment is so important. So maybe something very interesting to actually look at.
Mm-hmm. The other question I wanted to ask you was, you know, oftentimes people say that there's oftentimes like a there's not much of a need you know, for us to rebuild you know, old technologies again for new industries. I was wondering, you know, are there a lot of things that currently exist in healthcare in terms of digital tech that can be very easily migrated over to the psychedelic space? Or are we really just uncovering a completely new process that really just needs a whole new set of tools that we just have never been able to build before because we've never really been able to go this deep?
Yeah, I think there's two pieces of that. And, you know, Shlomi actually did a good job. Like the administration of psychedelic assisted therapy is very unique compared to some of the other ways that therapy is being done right now. But at the same time, I touched on a couple examples like Talkspace, Two Chairs, Mindstrong just raised $100 million USD. And, you know, they're well prepared and positioned to come and aid in this space once it actually comes to light. And actually, there's something that I want to touch on there quickly with MindStrong and just in general of this is the idea of active input versus passive input. So active input is something like we're doing here where someone is actually responsible for basically, you know, opening up an application or recording a note or writing a note, something like that. But where MindStrong is putting a lot of work into is passive data collection. So if you're going through ketamine treatment, treatment-resistant depression, you might be at the last straw in your life. And to ask someone to be compliant to, for example, doing journals each day or something like that might be a really difficult thing. So I think there's a lot of work going on in the space to help get data from sort of this passive collection that is going to come into the space and maybe from big companies like MindStrong.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Tyler. Really appreciate it. Always love having you on. And yeah, we'll continue the chat offline. Thanks again.
Beautiful. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.